You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Auto D show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Networks, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. I am your host, Otto Daniolo, and tonight my guest is Ruth McCartney of McCartney Multimedia, a full-service digital agency based in the LA area. Ruth is also involved in a number of projects with her mom, Angie, Mrs. McCartney's Teas and Wines, to name one. And also, together, they have a video podcast called T-Flix Tuesdays. You've got to check it out. Tonight's show is brought to you by my good friends at Fervor Records and also by TheRecordingArtist.com, where for the last couple of years, I've been recording independent bands just about every week. And if you've missed any of those AD live recording sessions, then check out The Recording Artist on Amazon Prime or on Roku TV, where you can see television episodes that feature segments of those recording sessions. To learn more, go to TheRecordingArtist.com. And now, without wasting any more of your time, let's get to the interview. Earlier this week, I had an opportunity to sit down with Ruth. So this show is pre-recorded. End up in you. Think you'll stay in LA forever as a home base?
We love Playa del Rey. It's this sleepy little town between, you know, north of us is Marina del Rey and south of us is Manhattan Beach. And they're all packed and full of yuppies and wokies and what have you. And we're just a bunch of old hippies sitting down here in tie-dye t-shirts, you know, getting our thing on. And nobody knows where it is, which is fantastic. We don't want anyone to know where this is.
Yeah, it's a beautiful space. In fact, I remember I have a memory I wanted to share of one time when I happened to be in town and I called you guys up. I had a girlfriend with me that was new in my life. And that, you know, I thought, oh, well, you know, they're in this area. I'll just let them know we're in town and maybe we can get together over the weekend. And you guys on the phone were like, why don't you just come on over? Come on over. We'll have breakfast. And I'm like, oh, are you sure? And you invited us up. And the memory is great. We come in. You guys are in your robes. You put out breakfast for us. We're all sitting there having breakfast. And you're talking business, you know, because business is in the house, too. And it was such a pleasant off-the-cuff visit. And I think it's important for people to recognize that's how you treat people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to be regimented. I have a thing on my email signature, youcanbook.me. So I have to kind of be regimented with time for meetings and stuff, but you know, if it's a holiday or a weekend or something, and that's very European, that's very English. You know, you don't ring somebody and make an appointment to come over for tea. You just knock on the freaking door.
Yeah, and trust me,
you put the kettle on, and if you're home, you know, you open the door and put the kettle on, and there you go.
Yeah, and you don't do that here, you
know. No, oh no, well, God, and especially some of these terrible, tragic things that have happened with kids knocking on the wrong doorbell and winding up dead.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's just awful.
It's a strange world we live in these days, and can be a strange country at times.
Yeah, it's still, to me, even though I'm from Britain, America's still the greatest country in the world, but they've got some marketing and polishing to do. You know, the phrase the American dream was actually invented in the early 1950s by an ad agency.
Really?
On Madison Avenue, yes. It was, I want to say, and somebody out there will correct me, I want to say it was part of the Cadillac campaign. And, you know, where they parked sort of a butter yellow Cadillac in a driveway of houses on a string, you know, that looks like Littleton, Colorado. And mother's in a poodle skirt and she's got two little toe-headed kids and dad's got a pipe and a cardigan. And that headline was the American dream, and it was advertising the car, and it just stuck.
That's crazy. I had no idea.
Yeah. There's some of the most amazing things. I mean, you know, we do at McCartney Multimedia, obviously, a lot of our business is branding and building a startup story from the ground up, including, you know, researching trademarks and building your logo and doing color tests and, you know, focus groups and stuff. So I've read quite a few books on sort of the history of Madison Avenue and marketing and branding and, you know, the things that are out there. My friend Judy Curran, who may actually be listening because she lives in your neck of the woods, and I will tell her when this is on. She is the original mudflap girl. You know, on the trucks, the chrome, the chrome girl?
Yeah.
She's the original mudflap girl. Her boyfriend at the time was a photographer, and he took a picture of her beautiful silhouette. And some years down the line, after they'd split up, he thought, that's such a great silhouette, wouldn't it? You know, and he turned it into a thing and a brand and stickers. And, you know, she's the original. She never got a dime, poor thing.
Oh, that's too bad. It's quite a claim to fame.
And then my other girlfriend, Cindy Rossman, who was in advertising, came up with It's Not Your Father's Buick.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I came up with, through a long Hatton stance, what wound up being what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Oh, really?
We were one of five very small ad agencies because we're woman-owned. We were invited by the folks in Vegas to submit like a new convention visitors bureau saying, and I came up with this whole concept because Vegas had become a real sort of take your kids Chuck E. Cheese kind of a town. And the complaint, you know, the casino owners that we were working for, MGM, Bellagio, Treasure Island, New York, all of those guys, they wanted the good old Rat Pack days back where people stayed up till four and drank gin martinis because that's where they make their money, right? Keep them on the tables gambling. They didn't want the lazy river and the bowl pit for the kids. So they were trying to kind of dirty up Vegas again. And we came up with this idea of a speakeasy. And it was at the time of Joe Camel. And I'm like, you know, Joe Camel, the cigarette camel, they've created this character. So we're going to have like Speakeasy Joe. And we did this whole little animated video and a presentation deck. And it was like, in the desert, it's not what, but who you know. Knock three times and ask for Joe. And then the character opens the thing and winks and says in a gruff voice, "What happens in Vegas stays here." And they stole it and just changed the last two words. I never saw a dime.
Wow. Well, congrats on the creation part, you know, the creative part. That's great.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have the check part.
Yeah, I hear you. Yep. You know, we just kind of jumped in without really going in any kind of a direction here. You mentioned the branding and you know, some of the companies you guys have worked with, but we never even talked about your company. So I was going to get to that last. Let's start there. McCartney Multimedia. Kind of give me the minute pitch, you know, the elevator pitch on McCartney Multimedia.
Sure. So McCartney Multimedia was started in 1994. We lost everything here in the Northridge earthquake. We picked up what little we had, put it in a Honda, and moved to Nashville, where my mom, Angie, got a job with the Tennessean. Martin, my husband, is an import-export forwarding agent by trade. He got a job at the airport, and I got a job writing songs for $200 a week. And along came this thing called the internet. So we learned it. I checked out the only 14 books that existed in the world on HTML, and I had to explain to them, God bless it, the librarian was like, "Are you sure you're spelling this right, honey? That this word says HTML. That ain't no word." And I'm like, you'll hear of it sooner or later. So we ordered the books. They came from all over the country. We learned code and started building websites. Fast forward now, 27 years. Good grief. We do everything from we're a complete digital branding agency from soup to nuts, and we can build your website, or if you've got one, we can host it. We do, you know, security. We have a video division, McCartneyStudios.com, with directors and DPs and animators and musicians and scoring and good folks like yourself on the music side of things. So McCartney is just, it's sort of a lifestyle brand. You know, you've got Paul out there, God bless him, at 82. Still,
my gosh, I know.
He's gonna tour Australia and Brazil.
Yeah,
I'll be here with my feet on the couch having a cheeky little Prosecco, I think. But it's a lifestyle brand because you've got, you know, Linda had the foods, and then you've got Stella with the fashion and Mary with the art, fine art photography. Mm-hmm. And so we just kind of fall into that gap of everything else, digital branding, web, social media, all of that. So mm-hmm.
Your clients run the gamut from large to small and from really all over the world. Would you say you've got enough on your plate, or are you always looking for new clients to work with?
Yeah, we are, actually, always.
Yeah.
I just love meeting interesting people. And I think the biggest misnomer about us is that you have to have $100,000 to play.
Right.
I'm working on a project at the moment for a music teacher who is wonderful, and his sister is an amazing PR gal. He needed a website. I needed some media relations and press stuff. And so we did. We traded it. We keep our timesheets and we trade things. So it's not always about the money. I will say, you know, we've shied away in recent years of, hey, well, you do all this work and you'll get a piece of the back end. Because unless I can verify, or our attorneys can verify, that there will be a back end and these people have right. A business plan and ROIs and whatever, I can't spend $5,000 on an attorney to go into a project $5,000 upside down to find out that, you know, they don't have a relationship with a banker, or they didn't raising money. Right? Yeah. So back-end stuff is not what we do. But yeah, no, we're always looking for clients because our Rolodex is so diverse that we often wind up introducing clients and friends to each other, and then they go off and do their own thing, and then they come back and have us do, you know, digital for them. Mm-hmm.
What's the favorite part for you in terms of what the agency does? Do you really enjoy the branding more, or does your mind like to go to the code aspect of and the nitty-gritty behind-the-scenes stuff?
Kind of both, but I like to get people to tell their stories that they don't realize are inside them. It's almost like coaching somebody to write a book or a white paper or an essay. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, a great product or a great idea, or they're an incredible artist or musician, but they've never thought of actually putting it into words, pages, a PDF, a presentation. I'm working with a couple of amazing chefs in Houston and doing sort of media and digital PR consulting for them. And what we've done is, you know, they're busy running a restaurant. They have a website that takes bookings and processes calendars, but they have no time to be doing a presentation deck. Nobody's ever spell checked their bio. Nobody's gone beyond the bio and said, well, what made you do this for the first place? What are your favorite ingredients? Are there anything to do? So it's kind of like being Jay Leno. I get to sit in the desk and they get to sit on the couch, and I get all of these incredible, interesting stories. And I start making notes going, ooh, you should meet so-and-so. You should meet so-and-so. So it's really about just the personalities you meet. It's kind of like a social club. Yeah. You know, I never feel like I'm working. Mm-hmm. Never.
Well, you mentioned pulling people's stories out. It's kind of like writing a book. Your mom's written a few books.
Yep.
Have you written a book?
I have not.
Do you think you'll ever do that?
I have thought about it, and I've been offered a couple of different publishing options. It's got to be a labor of love, right? Because there's really no money in books anymore, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of like being an author is like being a Spotify artist, you know?
Correct.
And I'm so busy sort of in service of trying to run our brands, Mrs. McCartney's Tea, Mrs. McCartney's CBD, helping Martin with Geist with his project. So if I have any spare time, it's just never for me. And honestly, I've got some funny stories, but who the heck am I? You know, I've got a few thousand people on Facebook. So if one in 50 bought a book, I might sell 30 copies. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But, you know, who the heck am I? That's an interesting thing to say, because I think the simple fact of growing up as a young girl with the name McCartney and in the household you were in, that has been a double-edged sword all through your life, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, people expect me to be, oh, well, you know, she's got the name McCartney. She doesn't need my help. She's got $1 billion. Think again. She's going to get her stepbrother's help, so she doesn't need my help. Or, well, if her stepbrother's not helping her, she must be crap, because if she was any good, he would.
Yeah. Or,
it's a revolving door. You can't win.
Hey, we can use her to get to her stepbrother. I bet you get a bit of that. God. I bet you started getting that when you were 8 years old.
Even now, I'm 63, and I know when he's announced a tour before I know it's coming, because I get probably last week, even though it's Australia, and my family knows better, but even though it's Australia, people I met there 25 years ago, Facebook Messenger, hey, can you get us backstage at the? There are people that I'm friends with on Facebook. I don't know who they are. I've never seen them on a screen. We've never spoken.
Sure.
And when Paul is on tour, it's like, so he's coming. This is a real one. He's coming through Seattle. It's my hometown. So I don't mind paying for like nosebleeds, but I'm going to need 4 backstage passes, and my mom's in a wheelchair, so I'll need to know where the ADA ramp is to get my mom backstage to meet your brother. But I don't mind paying for nosebleed tickets. I'm not asking for free tickets, but I need 4 people backstage, and one of them's in a wheelchair.
That's funny.
Well, God bless you, but why do you think I'm going to be able to help you with the Seattle Arena and their ADA compliance?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I can imagine. You and I have known each other for a long time now.
20 years, probably, isn't it?
It's been a while. And I think we've probably gone over that story in different places. In fact, it was funny as I've been reading some interviews you have done and watched some videos and stuff. And it's like, I know all this stuff, and we've shared all this stuff. And you've shared your story a lot of times. It's out there. And rather than just kind of duplicate some of that stuff, I was just interested from my own perspective, again, especially when you were young, to me, it was having Uncle John, because yeah. the stories that you've shared with me give me the impression that he was pretty sharp and out there. And you took a bit from that. I mean, that's kind of one of the things you credited the concept for your iFans, which yep. was part of the first, I think it was one of the first entities McCartney Multimedia basically rolled out, correct?
Yeah, right. So when we have this old retro website up, and I'm kicking and screaming, I don't want to upgrade it because it was built in 1998 and it uh-huh. still works. And it looks like it was built in 1998. So it's kind of my, you know, my retro throwback. Cool. But yeah, when John Lennon would occasionally come to Rembrandt, our house in near Liverpool on Wirral, because don't forget when John and Cynthia and Julian moved down to London, and then his auntie Mimi, who brought him up in Mendips, once he had a bit of money, he bought her a gorgeous house down in Poole in Dorset, which has actually just been knocked down. They didn't save it, I can't believe. And so he didn't have any close relatives up in Liverpool. So, you know, sometimes he'd come and stay in the guest room or in my brother Mike's room if Mike was on the road. And, you know, he'd go through the dining room, and we had all of these boxes. We used to get 3 or 4 sacks of mail every day. We had 2 deliveries a day. And the poor postman, I think he had a hernia, you know, because he'd bring these huge burlap sacks of mail. And part of my pocket money job was sorting them out and putting them into boxes by country and so on and so forth. So Australia and New Zealand went down under the dining table, and China and Japan went on the banquette by the east-facing window in the dining room. That was how I learned geography, and I had the greatest stamp collection of any 8-year-old could ever wish for. Oh, and yeah. John would come, and he'd sit on the floor sometimes and leaf through these letters and 3x5 index cards that my mom, Angie, would make out. And he'd go, God, you know, look at all these customers. If we could just ask them, you know, where we should go next and what we should sing and what we should wear, wouldn't it be great to just be able to talk to the customers? Because everything in those days was a one-way outbound fan letter, fan club zine, e-zine communication. There was no feedback. And so fast forward to 1998, when we got FileMaker Pro, woohoo, was mm-hmm. the first database to be able to go on the internet and collect data. So we started doing polls for people like David Cassidy and Andrew Gold and Edgar Winter, who is still a client after 25 years. And so, you know, with David Cassidy, he's like, I think I'm going to do a greatest hits album, but I have no idea what songs to sing. What do you think? You know, because I grew up as a fan. And I'm like, well, never mind what I think. Let's ask the 19,000 people on your email list. And he's like, I've got how many what now? I'm like, uh-huh. And so we gave them 20 songs to choose from. They came back with the top 10, and that was what he did. And then we went out and said, if you'd like to pre-order, this is like 2000, probably, mm-hmm. one. If you'd like to guarantee a pre-order signed, personally autographed with your name from David, send in your, because you couldn't, there was no PayPal, send in your check and you know, we put people, so we raised enough money to pay for half of the studio recording, for him to pay at least for the musicians up front to get the record made.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so you know, that, and that all came from John just lamenting that, yeah, we've got all these fans, but we don't know what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty wild. And you just mentioned the no PayPal. You were here, you were on kind of the cutting edge of the internet, which now we all pay online without thinking about it. But I remember on the backs of albums, they used to say, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to.
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah, we built our first site, and we moved to Nashville in April of 94. We probably put our first web pages up in, I want to say, September of that year.
How long were you guys in Nashville?
We were there 3 years, actually.
How
we
do you
came
like
back
it?
In 97. I did like it, kind of. So it was a total culture shock, because but in 94, there was no Starbucks, not a single sushi restaurant, no Trader Joe's, none of the home LA comforts, you know. So I ate a lot of deep fried pickles and deep fried pear and gained about 30 pounds. And but made some really good lifelong friends that were, you know, we've been back here since 97. Gosh, what's that? 25 years. Mm-hmm. We lived there, but we talked to our Nashville friends, you know, weekly. Yeah, Music Row was a, you know, a sleepy little 16th and 17th Avenue, and there was one or two restaurants, and that was it.
You know what? I'm actually going to be in Nashville next weekend because I'm singing. I'm gluing a beard on and going to sing at the Hillwood Country Club.
Excellent. Well, you have to check out, there's a venue called the Eighth Room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's run by Hollis, Jason Hollis. He's from New Orleans. He's a dapper young gentleman, and he's turned it into this kind of 70s glitz glam live music and cocktail bottle service lounge. So I will make sure and hook you guys up. But if there's anybody in Nashville listening, check out the Eighth Room. Their logo, he even has his own brew, his own beer. Their logo is an octopus because of eight.
Cool.
And they do record album launch parties there and
very cool.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah, no, it is very cool. Nashville's a cool town. They've got some amazing chefs. I have to go back. I mean, I haven't been back since I have once or twice since we left. But like I said, with the marvel of the internet and Zoom and things like that, you know, you can get to see your friends even if you're thousands of miles away.
Yeah, that's the best thing in the world. I'm finally a grandfather, and I get to see my grandchild on Zoom like every weekend from Illinois.
How did that happen? Where did the time go?
My daughter Candace is 43, retired, and decided to start having kids at 43.
Oh my God, you have a daughter who's 43?
Yeah.
But you're only 42. How does that work?
I don't do the numbers in order. That's all.
I'm not very good at math.
Yeah.
I leave the bookkeeping to mother.
That's right. That's good. But but at any rate, it is amazing how we can reach everybody. So you can stay home, kind of. It's also, yeah, in a sense, you can kind of do your job from anywhere, which again leads back to kind of why I wondered or asked you if you really thought you'd see yourself staying, you know, in California, because you can do it anywhere after a while.
As long as the ground ain't shaking and gas is under $10 a gallon, I think I'm going to stay here. Never say never.
You mentioned music earlier when you mentioned Martin and his Geist project. Does he, you know, you have a singing, have had a singing career, which I want to get onto too. Does he ever get you involved in his music projects? Does he get you singing background vocals and stuff?
Oh, all the time. Good. I help him with lyrics. I sing backgrounds on almost everything.
So you're still, in a sense, involved or dabbling in the music side of it from a career.
I engineer him when he's recording vocals, and I tell him, you know, stand on your tippy toes, you can do it better. So I produce some of his vocal sessions.
Cool. When's the last time you performed?
Live?
Yeah.
Well, it depends on what you're talking about. So, you know, we had this show before the pandemic. Angie and I, Martin, produced this show called The Magical History Tour. So I would go out and on stage and MC that and introduce the Beatle Band and, you know, be on the couch and so on and so forth. And we did that 2014 through almost up to the pandemic. But before that, I've MC'd a lot of charity events and things like that. But singing, honestly, it's all the way back probably to Siberia and Russia, Lithuania, Latvia, Armenia, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan. And that would be I was in Nashville, so 96, 97.
Back in the 1900s, huh?
Yes. There's some funny, crazy stories. It's so sad that, you know, those are some of the friends that I'm not in touch with because they're off Facebook because they live in Russia.
Yeah.
It's just tragic. It's, you know, the ordinary Russian people are fantastic.
Yeah.
They're so hospitable. You know, again, you say show up at your house and they make breakfast. These people don't have two nickels to rub together, and they'll run up and down the stairs in a block of flats and they'll find, you know, a hard-boiled egg or four olives, one piece of chicken, you know, and they'll put a banquet out and then these little tiny sauces and make you feel like, you know, the Queen of Sheba.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you had some big success there with some records, but I don't know the details.
I sold millions of concert tickets, but unfortunately, it was all in rubles and it was a non-exchangeable currency,
so you
couldn't bring it home.
So what did you do?
I donated it all to the Armenian Earthquake Relief Fund in Spitak and Leninikam. Of course I did. I drank a bunch of it in vodka.
That's about all you could do. Buy a bunch of vodka and ship it home or something, huh?
No, I mean, the only thing you could do in those days was heavy-duty farm machinery equipment. And we lived in a three-bedroom apartment in the middle of Munich, Germany. So there wasn't really a lot I could do with a combine harvester. It wouldn't fit in the garage.
Okay, now you just mentioned you lived in Munich. So that's one of the things I wanted to ask you. When did you leave the UK?
I was probably... So my dad died, Jim McCartney died in March of 1976. Then we had a series of, you know, Ange and I trying to start our own business with a partner that didn't work out. So we moved to London, and then I had five jobs. So that would be 1978 through like 82. I had five jobs. I was a 5 a.m. Early morning alarm call operator for most of the BBC DJs, make sure that they didn't miss their BBC radio show. And then at six, I would leave the house and go and teach jazz dance at the Pineapple Dance Center in the center of London, have a shower there. And then from 9 to 5:30, I was a receptionist at a production company called Roundel Productions. And then from 6:30 till closing, 10:30 or 11, I was a barmaid at the Admiral Codrington pub behind the back of Harrods. And then I had, after closing 10:30, I had a job in the West End cleaning offices till 1:30 in the morning. And then I would start again at 5 and call people and wake them up. So for about 4.5 years, I had 3.5 hours sleep a night.
Wow.
Gee whiz. Hell, you know, got to pay the rent.
You do. How did you get to Munich?
So, well, that's another convoluted story. So then I started having trouble with my ex, and I just decided, you know, London, love it. Too hard. So Angie and I had dear friends. She's still alive, Dame Babs, Dame Barbara, in Sydney. And they said, well, if you give us 6 weeks notice, we'll build an extension on the back of our house and put a hider bed out there, and you can come and live with us in Australia.
Oh my gosh.
So that's what we did.
That's crazy.
So we took off to from Australia. God bless. One of my regulars in the pub was a travel agent. And he said, well, you can't get into Australia without a return ticket or a ticket on out of the country. Because if you're not Australian and you don't have a $500,000 visa, you can't go in on a one-way ticket. So God bless him. He'd never even met my mom. He gave us, I bought the tickets from London to Australia. And then he gave us two more tickets on Pan Am, Australia to Hawaii. And he said, you've just got to promise me you'll mail me these back so that I can cancel them and get the money back, which we did. And so we got the cheapest possible flight on French UTA Airlines. And we went London, Paris, Paris, Bahrain, Bahrain, Singapore, Singapore, Darwin, Darwin, Sydney. Took 4 days.
Holy cow.
And all the way, I was just hoping that this woman with a squealing baby, like a circle saw, I was like, she's got to get off in Paris. You know, London to Paris is like an hour. Right. I'm like, oh, she's going to Paris. And no, she went all the way to Sydney. 4 days, the baby screamed. And what they did in French Airlines, we were in the middle two seats of the four in the middle of the back of the jumbo jet, of course. And they used to have these kind of totally unsafe, like these hammocks. And they would rig them up, and they would get them the overhead bin on either side, the handle, and then they'd lock the handle down, and they just dump the baby in there, and it would swing back and forth, and if it got turbulent, so this thing screamed for 4 days. So we bought some duty free in Paris, and we drank that by the time we got to Bahrain. We did the same thing in Bahrain, and we got off in Singapore with two empty bottles. I mean, it was just absolutely insane. And so we get to Sydney, and it's like, I don't know, 10:30 at night or something, and our host Willie Crawford picked us up and said, he said, you know, this is in, here's the Opera House where I worked for years. And his son, Rory, who's still a business partner of ours in Australia today. Oh, my son, Rory's, would you like to go and do a tour of the Opera House? They're all just coming out of the backstage entrance. I'm like, dude, I've been up since Tuesday. It's Saturday night. Give me a break. So we, you know, we eschewed the tour of the Opera House after a 4-day flight. We get home to his house. We get our little pathetic suitcases out. We're just like bouncing off the walls. It is pouring like tropical rain. We get up, get in the house. He switches on the lights, and there's 50 of his neighbors there. Surprise! Welcome to Australia! They planned a party, and I just wanted to cry. I was like, holy crap.
Oh, my gosh.
So we showered, we partied, and we went to bed at, I don't know, 5 o'clock in the morning with pots and pans and buckets to catch the rain, because you know they had literally gone to Home Depot and built this lean-to on the back of their house. That was where we were going to live, right? So we got jobs doing actually there was a touring Elvis Presley museum of his artifacts, and so Ange and I got jobs producing the tour, and stayed there for 6 months. Our visas ran out, and the Australian immigration will come around to your house and say, you know, you're leaving in 3 days, don't you? And they're like, oh, really? We've got you, you know, on a list, and you did tell us where you were staying, and you haven't filed an extension, so you do know you're leaving in 3 days. And I was like, oh, okay, got the message. Shit, book a flight somewhere. So I called my cousin Beryl in Laguna, so now it's March of 83, and Beryl's like, come on down, you can come and live with me. So off we go again. So that was, California was March of 83, was the first time. Lived here until I met a cute little guy in the desert on a film shoot in, I'm so bad with years. It was either, I think it was 86 or 88. Fell madly in love with him. And 9 days later, we went to Vegas and I married him, only to find out that he lived in Munich. So then it was time to move to Munich. And I'm like, and every time my mom hears this, oh, and she's like, oh, God, where are we going to live now? Holy crap, what have you done? So we lived in Munich, and I was doing my singing and songwriting and all of that performing nonsense that I've been doing in Hollywood. And I just went down the yellow pages, and there was BMG under S for Schallplattenfirmen, which is German for record companies. There's me looking under R for record companies, and my husband was laughing at me. He's like, what are you looking for? Record labels. I need a deal. So I found BMG, made an appointment, went in and sang at the piano, and they signed me. So there I am in Munich. So wow. That was till, that's probably 87 or 88. And then that marriage fell apart. We're still great friends. And then I met Martin, my current husband, on the 9th of January, 91. And
How did you guys meet?
We eloped back here in the December of that year, but I'd started my whole Russian life, and so I still kept going back there and doing concerts and stuff even after we'd moved back to Nashville.
You probably still go back and do a show.
I probably could, but you know the problem is it's Russia.
Yeah, not a good time.
I like I said before, I have nothing against the people, but you don't want to be a high profile foreigner these days, in case they, you know, snatch you for red meat.
That's the truth. Now, how did you actually meet Martin?
At a funeral. So, unfortunately, yeah, I shouldn't be laughing, but unfortunately, a mutual acquaintance of ours did die by suicide. And she was an American living in Munich. And she would just, you know, hit a bad patch and wrong people, and she got into a Jesus cult and then a devil cult. And then, you know, I think she had some schizophrenic, bipolar, whatever issues. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know the difference. And she was found, she'd walked out into the snow on Christmas Eve, and we found her about a week later when the snow melted. And so they had her funeral in Munich, and they called, her parents were from Cincinnati. And so they called all of the bilingual speaking artists in town and said, would you come and comfort the parents and translate? They wanted an open casket, hour and a half Catholic Bavarian interment ceremony in January. So I sat on one side with the mother translating the ceremony, and Martin sat on the other side between the grieving parents. We kept catching each other's eye going, hello.
What an odd way to meet.
Yeah, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. It's like the end of Wedding Crashes, right?
Right.
You go to a funeral.
Yeah.
And then the story gets even stranger, because we didn't actually meet on that day. We sort of clocked each other, and I had long hair extensions, those like long nylon braids all the way down to my ankles. I had like 11 bundles of hair. And I used to ride a bicycle everywhere, and my briefcase was a wickerwork basket. And I was just kind of a bit, you know, out there. And not that I'm not now, but, you know. And he remembers looking at me going, what a complete idiot. Holy crap. Who does she think she is? You know, Janet Jackson for white people or whatever. And so, and I looked at him and went, whoo, crunchy snack. Come on down, you know. And so cut to about 3 weeks later, I was in the recording studio. It was what they call Faschingsdienstag. It's Carnival Tuesday, Fat Tuesday.
Okay.
And they celebrate it heavily in Germany. And so everything's closed. So we were able to get the recording studio at Jupiter Records nice and quiet. So I was going to go in and stack a bunch of vocals. And Martin, unbeknownst to me, had been working with my engineer, with Harold Faltermeyer, with a different producer at a different studio. And he got stuck on some English lyrics on a song that he was writing. So he called Dave Cook's wife, Magda, and she said, oh, she's working with one of those McCartney people. I think she's related to Paul McCartney. He's at Jupiter Records. It's called the Studio B number. I'll give it to you. Maybe Dave can help you out with these English lyrics. So Martin calls Dave, and Dave's like, I'm busy trying to track this crazy girl who can't really sing, but yeah, here, let me put her on. She's English. Maybe she can help you write the lyrics. We were 5.5 hours on the phone, and we agreed to meet like 2 days later. So he gives me his address. I buy some bakery. He said, I'll have coffee made. I said, I know this great little French bakery. I'll bring croissants and we'll finish this song. Not knowing whose flat I'm going to, but knowing he's a friend of Dave and Magda, so I'm not going to get, shanghaied, right?
Right.
So I get there, I park in the freaking snow, I go up 99 wooden stairs, I knock on the door, and the guy from the funeral opens the door. We never got the song finished. So it was a bit more of a horizontal adventure.
What a great story. That is hilarious. That is freaking hilarious.
So we kind of met twice. And 32 and a half years later, the poor guy's still here. He keeps saying, 32 years. I'm still here. He said they only gave OJ 16 years for the robbery.
Gosh. Well, he is a joker, isn't he?
He's amazing. He's my best buddy.
Well, and you do that. You've got your whole life is living with and in business with your husband and your mom.
Correct.
And you guys are doing a bunch of things together, like your mom with Teeth Licks Tuesdays. How much fun has that been?
It's great. So every Tuesday at 11:30 Pacific on Dr. Angie McCartney's Facebook page, we just find for a half hour, 40 minutes, maybe an hour, with just fascinating people like yourself, right? And like, all kinds of just crazy. Marshall, who was recently a guest of yours, we just had Lawrence Juba.
I was going to say, I haven't said that was just yesterday or day before yesterday.
Yeah, recently from Wings. And then the amazing Marcella Detroit, who was, part of Shakespeare's sister. And just musicians and chefs and producers. And I just want people to have, a cup of tea on a Tuesday and know that there's still creative, good, honest people out there. We don't discuss politics. We don't go there. We don't air any questions. If questions come up from the crowd about, what do you think about this or that? Because you cannot win. Not just this country. This world is so divided. It's a 50-50 fight. So you're going to lose half your audience. So we just don't bother. We just keep it to, people's expertise and their stories. And it's kind of an extension of what I do with clients.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Marshall Terrell as a guest, and that was also on my podcast recently. What a character. 30 books he's written, always continuing to write. You guys collaborated on his first audio book. I'd like you to tell me about that service that you offer.
Right. So obviously Marshall came in and recorded with you, but then he didn't have time to do all of the outtakes and the sweetening. And so, Martin again and his genius in twiddling knobs and so on and so forth was able to expedite the process. So, Marshall could just do a read and then get it out of his schedule. And we just cut and paste and, sweeten and edit and mix and do all of the things. In fact, one of our guests 2 weeks ago, fantastic English film composer called Helene Muddyman. She has been working doing musical soundtracks for audiobooks with a company that was originally called Meta Books, M-E-T-A Books, but they sold their brand name to Mark Zuckerberg when he changed Facebook to Meta. So I have a call with those people next week because what they're trying to do is make an audiobook an all-around experience, not just a voice.
I think that's an incredible idea.
Why not? I mean, but a lot of these platforms like Audible and Amazon and ACX and whatever, they're like, you can only upload real voices. You can't have background music. You can't announce, I wanted to put some kind of, with the Zora Folly Marshall Terrell audiobook about this incredible boxer from Phoenix, in between the chapters, I'm like, can't we have a sound effect of like a punching bag? And Amazon's like, no sound effects, just voice. I mean, why? Who made that rule? Let's break that. Well, on that front, though, we do have something that's different that's called verifiedvoicevault.com. Mm-hmm. And that is right now it's for professionals and narrators and actors and podcast hosts and whatever. So we take a sample of their voice and store it in our verified voice vault so that if they ever get cloned or deep faked or whatever by any of these horrible you know, cheap AI platforms out there, we can hand them a USB stick with their voice print, the date that it was registered with us, the vault number, and all of those things, which saves them a fortune in legal fees to be able to hopefully try and go after these people who, you know, we've all seen them. Tom Cruise dancing in a bathrobe. Guess what? That's not him. And they're doing the same with audio. So there was recently a case in the paper where a woman got a call, assuming it was from her daughter. It was her daughter's voice saying, "No, mommy, the bad men have got me. They want, you know, 3 Bitcoin. So the next phase of Verified Voice Vault is going to be for the consumer. You can register your voice with us. You'll have a safe password and an unsafe password. And, you know, you'll be able to get a purple check mark. You can put it on your social media thing saying this voice is protected by the verifiedvoicevault.com. It's kind of like the ADT alarm sign on your lawn. It's like, go rob somebody else. Go clone somebody else. Because, you know, and we're thinking that's in the range of, I don't know, you know, $100 to $120 a year for storing it and keeping it. Because, you know, unless you have that, all kinds of people are getting cloned, little old ladies. Yeah. Hey, you know, can you, hey, son, I've forgotten my social security number. What is it? And they're taking voices off TikTok and answering machines. And it's terrifying.
It is terrifying. It's a crazy, crazy time. I think that's a great product. And I think that there's going to be a growing need and wish for it. It's kind of like when LifeLock came out. The first time you heard of it, you were like, well, that's a stupid idea. Who would pay for that? And pretty soon you're like, oh, my gosh, you know, you need the protection.
Well, it's LifeLock for your voice, basically.
Yeah. Well, then let me ask you something else. Everybody's talking about AI, and you mentioned deepfakes and clones, but how do you see AI impacting the arts industry? To me, I can picture it decimating it in a lot of different ways. I'm trying to find a way in my mind where I feel like it's going to be a good thing.
I think it also, ultimately, if human nature prevails, of course, there are always bad actors and evildoers and, you know, whatever. These are the people that, you know, hack Cloudflare, for example. If you're that brilliant of a computer programmer, go find a cure for cancer, for heaven's sake, you know. But the arts and entertainment industry, but it's like, you know, what did somebody say to me the other day? That the electric light bulb didn't destroy the candle industry. Just kind of have to live side by each, as the Canadians would say. For example, Angie's one, her next tome is going to be limericks. And she is actually actively training ChatGPT on limerick meter, and how she keeps going, eh, wrong, do it again. So she, at 93 years old, she's on ChatGPT training it on how to write limericks in 3 stanzas.
That's fantastic.
So, you know, for her, that's great. That's good for her brain. It's a fun PR story to tell.
Yeah.
And it's getting her limerick book written and out into the marketplace 8 times faster than if she sat there chewing a pencil.
What's your take on this then? A friend of mine said to ChatGPT, write a country song in the style of this artist and this artist, you know, about this, you know, and then just give me the lyrics. It wasn't for music. It was just for lyrics. Yeah. And the lyric was actually really good. He posted it on Facebook and goes, oh, my gosh, at first I thought I was impressed and then I was scared. And so my remark to him was, you know, intellectual property rights and AI generated content that's essentially coming from a scanned database in a sense, I would say file a copyright on that song and put it out until somebody tells you that everything ChatGPT creates is a violation of copyright law. Until they do that, there's who owns that piece of, who owns that thing that they did for that?
Right, well, and all you legally have to do is change one word, now it's yours. So you file a derivative copyright.
So it's right? It's just crazy to me where it's going. It's hard to see. I mean, ultimately, performance is where money is. The only place money is now, performance of merchandise, and that's just going to increase, essentially.
I think it'll just increase the amount of stuff that Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Spotify have to sell, which, you know, it'll put some people out of work. But again, it's like, you know, we all learn to live with the aforementioned combine harvester. Right?
Yeah.
But now we have 8 billion people. Can you imagine if every single piece of fruit and wheat was still being picked by hand? We'd all be starving.
That's right. Absolutely.
So, yeah. I just wish that they would focus more in the media on the things that this could do to the Human Genome Project, to AIDS research, cancer research, you know, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all these things. You know, if you fed all the knowledge from 23andMe, the Human Genome Project, and anonymously the HIPAA thing on, let's say, everyone who has Parkinson's. I wonder how long it would take AI talking to other AIs to say, well, have you tried this? Mm-hmm. I wish there was more focus on that than the, holy crap, I'm scared to death.
Yeah.
Well, but, like anything new, people, the first flush is always, oh, it's fantastic. And then they panic and then it all settles down again.
Yeah. How about NFTs? Have they settled down again? Is that, where are we at with the NFT world?
I don't know if NFTs will ever come back in the same way that, you know, the Beeples and the first flush of it did. But we work with a great company in New York called Upstream.exchange, and they are creating NFTs for utilities. So if you want to get into a concert and get the t-shirt and go backstage, so, you know, you buy the platinum NFT and it's all on your phone. It's kind of like, it's the boarding pass QR experience, like moved up to the next level. So
interesting.
Check out upstream.exchange. They're doing lots of stuff in sports and college sports. They're creating NFTs for college sports athletes with the universities and the network, so that you can, you know, you could follow the content on the NFT on your phone about the athlete. You get the stats, you get the scores, you can, you know, there's a meet and greet for NFT members once a month. There's a Zoom and things like that. So I think they're going to be sort of QR codes on steroids. Cool. If they're used as utilities, I think that's where they'll find their value settle out in the marketplace. What do I know? I'm only the digital diva.
I know. And not only that, you had a client with an NFT release being May Pang with her photos.
Yes.
Of John Lennon back in the Lost Weekend period to, yes, kind of coincide with the release of her movie. Hey, obviously, you've seen the film.
Yes.
I did, too. I loved it. Thought it was fantastic.
Do you know what I love, too, is the cartoon animation stuff.
Yeah.
Where pictures and video didn't exist.
Right.
It still put you in that moment. The production's great. I hope May does really, really well with it. She's super nice lady, and she's super talented.
Mm-hmm. And do you know what's going on with that right now? I mean, I think we only had a few dates in Phoenix.
About distribution. She's out actually on the road. If you go to maypang.com or follow her on Facebook or Instagram, she's out on the road doing meet and greets and chats and signed limited prints of some of her photographs and lithos and stuff. Cool. And she also has feng shui Maypang jewelry. She has hot sauce. She's like my mom. She's just, you know, Mrs. Branding. She just gets out there and gets it done. We love May. She's awesome.
I know. It's crazy. And
you had her on the podcast?
You know, I have not had her on my podcast.
I can ask and see what her, because there's certain things about the movie she's allowed to talk about and certain things are still embargoed. But when that all shakes out, I will definitely recommend.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
On the show. Yeah, she's fab.
In fact, she has we have a mutual friend that I believe I introduced to you, Aaron Riley.
And oh, yes.
Aaron's a dear friend of May's. And I mentioned that you guys had done the NFT with May. And she sends me a photo of her and May. She goes, on her phone, and goes, I just took this 2 weeks ago. We were hanging out having lunch. It's kind of funny how all these people connect, you know. But I'll be seeing Aaron in New York in a couple of weeks because we were going back there for a little event. So
that's all right. We'll give her a squeeze.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're kind of coming up on the end of this, our time here. Let me ask you this. What have you got going on that you're excited about that's new? I mean, what's coming up next?
Well, you know, again, a couple of things. VerifiedVoiceVault.com, I think, is going to be, once we get the consumer $10 a month switch model turned on,
yeah.
I think that's something that'll be a great utility for people. On Martin's front, there's Geist, G-E-I-S-T, music with a K.com. It's a trilogy. I sort of dubbed it Harry Potter for grown-ups. So it's the everyman story. The character is Martin Cole, almost eponymous. And he goes through the Book of Shadows and the Book of Mirrors to make a decision, then the Book of Shadows, and then he's currently upstairs in the studio working on the Book of Light. So go check. It's not a book, it's not a video series, and it's not an album. The product doesn't exist. He makes a music video for every single song. There's soundscapes, there's spoken dialogue with actors. It's kind of amazing. And McCartney Multimedia, of course, is the beast that keeps on ticking. And I'm actually in the middle of building ruthmccartney.com.
Finally. So. There you go.
Yeah, finally. Exactly. I mean, like the plumber who you go to the plumber's house and his toilet's dripping, you know?
Well, yeah. And it's kind of like you said, how, you know, you end up putting people together. I think that you spend a lot of time in support of your mom's dreams and projects as well, because you can facilitate and be such a big part. And the same thing with Martin. So, I mean, with Angie, she's, besides T-Flix Tuesdays with you and besides her teas and wines, now she has the CBD line of product coming out.
Right.
So, I mean, she's going to keep you busy.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Forever.
I know. Until one of us poisons the other one.
Well, she's gonna be around. That girl is something else. She's still a firecracker.
Well, you know, when COVID came out, she said, "Yeah, I see your COVID. I raise you Adolf Hitler and the Blitzkrieg."
Jeez.
Okay. I got your point. She lived through that, you know. Yeah. Not to take it away, we lost a lot of friends, and COVID was not the flu. It was a very serious thing. Mm-hmm. But just her attitude of, well, we're going to get through this, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That was what they were made of, so. Well, thank you so much for inviting me. This has been
I appreciate you coming on. Your story of 4 days to Australia reminds me of how lovely nonstop flights are. And I just I can't imagine 4 days to get someplace. So that was a fun
layovers. One. Layovers in Singapore and Darwin and lovely.
It was crazy. Well, yeah, thank you too.
As Lisa Stansfield would say, I've been around the world and oy, oy, oy.
Well, thanks, Ruth.
Thanks, Otto.
We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, my friend. Good to see you.
Take care.